Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good Friday afternoon and welcome to Home Run. This time of the day, as usual, here on Eagle FM, it's your favorite duo. That's Helmut and Dwight with Home Run to keep you company until the hour of 6. And it's Friday, so it calls for a celebration. That is, especially if you're a teacher or police officer, then your chances are very high you are going to have a good Friday. But for my fellow month enders, just hang in there. Hang in there. It's just a couple of more days. By that, I mean a week plus. So let's talk about water a bit now, shall we? And this is water on the African Union level. And this is something that I believe we have in abundance, and we don't really value something when we have it in excess until we have it in, you know, until it becomes scarce. That's when we start freaking the heck out. And now, about what, 70% of the earth is water? And you have to understand that most of it is salty, so you can't drink it. So when you're looking at fresh water, it becomes a whole different discussion in terms of quantity. And if you just look at, especially in terms of access to clean water. Now, water and energy are two things that I find fascinating, because just in on the sixth of this month, a very interesting report came out of Kenya from Business Insider Africa, and it reads as follows. You know, this is why I find the discussions around water and energy very, 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 very fascinating. Now, Kenya suspends. Now, this is earlier this year. Now, this is earlier this month. Kenya suspends $1 billion Microsoft data center as energy shortfall raises doubt over Africa's AI ambitions. They actually had to cancel. Microsoft and Kenya had an agreement for Microsoft to build a data center in Kenya. But data centers, they suck up so much energy that the Kenyan government went like, yeah, you know what? We are not being against technology. We are just saying this is a lot of energy. Now, what were some of the words basically that came out of, what are some of the words that came out of the Kenyan government? Well, now, this is a facility that was first announced during, that was announced in 2024. Now, this is the part now I don't understand about politicians. This is a discussion that came out of, they announced a project, and this was, as you can imagine, during Ruto's visit to Washington in 2024. So data centers are built by guys that are in tech. Now, last time I checked, these are the guys that are good at meth. Shouldn't they have looked at Kenya's energy infrastructure before coming up with an idea of, before putting together a billion US dollars for an investment that they would later cancel because the energy demand is so high, they will have, it will end up consuming like half of the country's energy demand. It will be like, that's how much energy it will need to sustain at least per year. The facility first announced during Ruto's state visit to Washington in May 2024. I swear Ruto will get Kenyans killed. But anyway, the facility first announced during Ruto's state visit to Washington in May 2024 was expected to be located about 100 kilometers northwest of Nairobi in a rural and run largely on geothermal energy. That was terrible idea number one. Anyone that just understand, anyone that has been keeping up with the energy demand of data center knows that renewable energy, data centers on renewable energy, that's like trying to run, a Land Cruiser V8 with solar. How long do you think that's gonna last? Now, my favorite part is, if a comedian sitting somewhere in Winter can figure this out, how come guys that basically have all the math, the qualification, plus the salary, ridiculously high salary that comes with it, to basically understand all that, they don't seem to be figuring all this out until it's late. From 2024 to 2026, that's how long it took them to realize that it sounds absolutely ridiculous to run a data center on, you know. But don't get me wrong. This is the things that makes me love my job. But don't, now, we're going to get to water. This is just the energy discussion. Now, the investment valued at approximately $1 billion US was positioned to as a flagship project to deliver a cloud service via Microsoft platform to business and government institutions. So data centers, so basically, well, being, you know, under the control, you know, under the leadership of yours truly, Microsoft. Then, well, fast forward from 2024 to 2026. Fast forward to 2026, they had to call off the whole project because, you know, after they realized the following. However, speaking in Nairobi earlier this month, Ruto said the scale of the project exposed significant constraints in Kenya's electricity system. The country's installed capacity currently stands at 3,000 megawatts, and the proposed data center alone would require roughly a third of that supply. Yeah. Now, so from the look of things, you know, the calculation that was done by Washington and Nairobi on the Microsoft data center in 2024, and then they realized, you know, earlier this month that that data center will consume like a third of the country's energy. A third of the country's energy. So they just decided, you know, you can imagine they just went back to Microsoft and say, ah, you know what, my guy, that data center that you said we should well bring him, we are just realizing now in 2026 that we don't have enough energy infrastructure to feed the thing.
Let alone water for the cooling.
Yeah. That's just the energy.
And keep it running.
Now, two things data centers are known to consume, like a hot knife through butter, is energy and water.
And it creates
a lot of noise.
Too much heat. I'm now going to talk about, obviously, Paratus's own
data center.
Data center, the one here outside that we, the media, had a whole field day. We were given a tour and everything. I remember that day.
Yeah.
So we showed up there, Hamid, and you won't believe me. It feels like you're walking in an Area 51 bunker.
So it's underground.
It's not underground. Mm. It's above ground, but how it's constructed is technically to ensure that any
all the insulations now,
any heat from outside never comes in. Even
because there's already high enough heat being generated from inside.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
And then there's the cooling, which is a whole bunch of air conditioning. Now, at the heart of the data center's particular, let's call it its pride and joy moment, mm-hmm. is it's according to the engineer that was also presenting at the time and that I spoke to after, you know, when we had the beers and the finger foods, you know, after the formal presentations by the CEO and, you know, the necessary.
Every home in Africa is a melting pot of memories around the table. The steady stir of Njima by the fire. The sizzle of Kapana on open coals. From Luanda to Lusaka, Windhoek to Gaborone, different languages, different stories. And at the center of it all, a table. A table where culture is shared, where heritage is celebrated, where families gather, traditions are passed down, and every meal is a memory. This Africa Day, ShopRite is proud to celebrate the families, the flavors, and the stories that make every meal so special. ShopRite, lower prices you can trust, always.
Lipura nenge no wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebito danjuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune uto otukwetera o special angeta shake ngeje pa omarudi kayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijabweli nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. We continue. So, data centers and in the insane insulation.
Yeah. Well, not insulation. Technically, it's not insulation. Mm. But it looks like an insulation, but it's not an insulation. The aim is it's some sort of an aspect of ensuring that cool air continuously circulates through the whole facility. That's what the engineer explained it to me, like on the side, and he said, don't you, this is off the record. I was like, wow. You know, so the whole core, the core concern is obviously because it's obviously the even design, like you know, is an intellectual property. So the core concern, Helmut, is one based upon how are these new data centers negotiated for? Because the concerns that obviously come up, and I know, dear listeners, if you've seen our social media poster coming up now, the aim is actually based upon AU's reaffirmation after like 15, 17 years,
yeah,
19 years actually, no, 18 years, yeah, 18 years of saying, we affirm that we will achieve the water goals and sanitation goals of Africa by 2025. How did that go? But anyway, so what's currently popping out from the United States is that there's a whole bunch of local authorities in the US mm-hmm. who are technically being scammed by technology companies who approach the councils, the town councils, the local authority council.
Uh-huh.
They propose to the local authority council, and then they negotiate with the local authority council not to pay water and electricity, but that water and electricity bill, the costs, are deferred and transferred onto the residents of the town. Now I'm going to ask you, Helmut, if said particular capital project happened in Okahanja, and none of the town councillors in Okahanja told the rest of the residents of Okahanja, hey, there's going to be this new technology installation going to be built in the town, but you guys are going to pay for the water and electricity. Do you think there would have been a sane individual in that town that would have said yes if they were told, you're going to pay for that thing's water and electricity because we negotiated that thing should be here for free?
You know, my biggest fear is if they packaged it in a way that makes it sound like it's an employment creation mechanism, you'll have a bunch of people falling for it.
But it's a short-term employment creation mechanism, Helmut, because it can be built within 18 months, a data center.
And that's it.
That's it. Or you can renovate an old, abandoned building, and that's your data center. That's just what they've been doing in the US and Europe. Old, abandoned warehouses and buildings.
Yeah.
The walls are there. You just need to install the cooling you want. It's not that it's a built for purpose like here in Namibia, with that thing outside Ventuk on the way to Okahanya. But it's literally repurposed buildings and structures. And repurposed buildings and structures would tell any person, hey, listen, this means any add-ons that you bring into the renovation of this structure means it's you are working from a design perspective and not from a construction perspective. So you're not building something, you're just fitting the building with new features.
It's more like repurposing.
Yeah, which is just facelifting, putting a lot of makeup on and plastic surgery onto the building, and then the building has a different role to play. And its employment opportunities are literally like 10 people. It's less than 20 people operating a data center. That's it. The worst part is even about a data center, Helmut, is that literally a data center is literally like an outsourced piece of IT infrastructure. So if your company's IT technician has to sort something out on a server that your company is renting in that data center, your guy has to drive from wherever, make an appointment and say, hey, we're coming. We have to correct some files on this thing. We're coming. Then they've got to drive there. And they literally have to spend time there. They will be given the opportunity to spend time right at that data center and ensure network integrity, file in recovery and integrity, all those other things regarding the integrity of the data is maintained. They do their maintenance and then they go back to the head office.
Jeez.
So it's not like even like the thing is going to work autonomously and you are just pressing buttons from far. Never. There is still going to be a human involved. Which is the biggest lie that the AI guys have been selling because...
Okay.
Yeah.
First, you have a private company that's coming to a local authority and they're telling them we are building something, and then they do build that piece of infrastructure, but the energy bills is put on the locals.
Mm. Now, would you ever say yes to such a thoughtless approach? Because there's no thinking applied in that approach.
There's a lot of evil and creative thing. You know, the more I read stories about stories like that, the more I begin to realize why every time I watch movies, I've never watched a movie where the evil guy is broke.
Actually, I have watched the movie where the evil guy is broke.
I don't see how that movie is going to work.
And the worst part is, it's even a movie that was an animation movie. It's, what's the evil character's name, Tuchman? Brainiac, but Brain something. It was a Pixel, Disney Pixel, Pixar movie. And the good guy, the hero, all he wanted to do was to just be out of the public light, out of the limelight.
Was his privacy.
Was just to have privacy. Smoke a cigar, walk around in his underwear and his flat, and just hide from the public sphere. But that's not, you know, under the story in the movie, that's not what the aim was. And the supposed bad guy in the story, the evil guy, all he wanted to be was to be also recognized. He was like this left out, this kid that didn't have friends because he was blue, his head was big, and he had big eyes, and he was always the most intelligent one in the class. So the unfortunate thing is, his people skills were bad, besides him looking different.
As always.
And everybody else liked the cool kid, which is the hero in the story. So it was a discussion about friends and obviously,
basically social life.
Social life and how to socialize and all that. And later on, the bad guy becomes the hero because he has to solve now an issue of a new hero guy that he helped become a hero, who's now becoming a Napoleon Bonaparte /
let power get his head,
/ Austrian painter mentality, who wants to now subjugate the whole of humanity because he's now the strongest in the world. Now the clever guy now has to now defeat a real bad guy, a real evil guy. Well, the real good guy, you know, is just walking around in his little Havaianas,
not a good guy, that's a lazy guy.
That's all he wanted to do. He just wanted to chill at his place and just, you know, drink pina coladas all day long. He didn't care.
The whole idea of, you know, just coming up with a project only to put the energy tab on the people that are not benefiting from it, at least not in a way that you are, that's just plain evil. Back to data centers. The energy and water consumption of data centers is becoming a serious concern on a daily basis. And, the exact same thing is happening in Spain, where you have a lot, especially locals that are like, okay, you know what? This is just, we should, especially the locals, we were not given enough information about what this thing really is.
Mm.
Because now that it's here, we are experiencing firsthand what it's capable of doing. It's like, if you are one of the locals, it's easy to look at it as having disadvantages that outweigh the advantages.
But now
that brings us to the water discussion. So the water discussion, especially in the African continent, we are having this discussion at the very same time, or at least, or, you know, the water discussion has been going on for a while. It turns out we had a Vision 2025, right?
Yes, 2025.
Right. Yeah, we had a Vision 2025 where we decided, you know what, we are going to make sure to sort out everything water, you know, all the water-related issues on the African continent by 2025. We're in 2026. And we, which means this whole time that I've been just been, you know, making fun of the African Union on their silencing of the guns by 2021, that also fell on its face. It turns out there's another vision that fell on its face last year. Career politics. But look.
And they've been reaffirming since 2008 about water and sanitation. Since 2008.
Look, this whole meeting, these annual meetings, is just a photo opportunity and also an opportunity to practice their English. And, okay, they do that in Parliament all the time. But the point is, it brings up a whole discussion of, okay, how much have we discussed in terms of, in terms of discussion to implementation ratio? Just how important are these annual discussions? Because thanks to technology, you can just make it Zoom at this point. Just make it Zoom. And then everyone takes a selfie and then just...
It's a Zoom call. It's even if you don't want to record a disastrous video conferencing situation, you can do it as a WhatsApp call.
Yeah.
There's even Google Meets. I mean, they can do so much things instead of saying, we want to be there for the buffet.
Now there's a whole delegation. You see, now that also brings up the discussion of, okay, now we haven't sorted out the water discussion, obviously, on a consumption level. And now we are looking, like the minister, I believe the minister of ICT said, you know, poor. That, we obviously have to keep up with technology. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to, you know, to wait for us to revamp our infrastructure before, you know, before it, you know, before it advances, because it's advancing by the day. So we have to keep up. But, that's, even the, I know that was said on a level of a country, but the same message, if you ask me, applies to the whole continent. What that translates into is, a lot of, a lot of things to sort out, especially when you're looking at the implementation discussion, because who is going to, in terms of, in terms of development of this technology, forget the digital part and generally and the advanced one, the advanced digital one, which would be AI. We are not even there mechanically yet. The mechanical components, we are nowhere near there. And after that mechanical components, we will have to upgrade things for, to the digital and then straight up AI. Now, the thing is, the knowledge is there on the continent. The knowledge is there. And Kenya is on that list of, because I think that was last year or the year before last when it came out that Kenyan students are doing assignments for Western students for money. In other words, someone who is sitting in Europe and and the US, who is stuck with the, who is stuck with the assignment, they are sending they are sending the assignments, they are sending basically the questions to someone in Kenya to do that assignment, to send it back to them for them to submit for a fee, kind of like a lot of Namibians are doing with a lot of foreigners here. So wherever you see people, I'm graduating. There's a Zimbabwean who is graduating somewhere secretly. But hey, it's called connection. Connection. Knowing a guy who knows a guy. Yeah. Even that first party in, the Lord and Savior's miracle, where he turned to, water into wine. It was a party, according to the Bible, not me. The party, they ran out of alcohol, they ran out of wine. Some argue that the wine is non-alcoholic. I'm like, sure, of course, let's go with that. But the thing is, well, they ran out of wine, and everyone was like, okay, we're out of wine. What are we going to do now? The thing is, Mary knew a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy who brought the wine back to life, and everyone had a good time. I think from that time, it became very dumb to throw a party without alcohol. Like, is that a party or a conference? Even conferences have alcohol. But things, solving the water discussion in Africa. This is, I'm assuming, drinking water. Because, yes, we have an ocean, but seawater is pretty useless in terms of consumption. Unless you can build desalination plants, and the Middle Eastern countries have basically set even a very good example on how to on how possible that is, because first of all, their land is a literal desert, and they are surrounded by what you'd call a desert in terms of water that is that can be used for consumption and agriculture. So now, you can picture them as living in two deserts. So they had to build desalination plants, and so far they've been doing, if you ask me, so far so good.
Who helped?
The Middle Eastern countries.
They've been bombed, Helmut.
Before Iran decided to go on full renovation.
So,
but the thing is...
No, Iran didn't go full renovation.
No, that's not.
Iran went, okay, so... okay, you are shooting at me, ne Israel. Okay, fine. How about you, UAE? Okay. Oh, you need water. Oh, okay. How about we transfer the energy of aggression. You know, the aggression is flying here from the Mediterranean. We transfer it onto you.
Energy cannot be created or destroyed.
No, it cannot. Mm. It needs to move.
Yep.
And so, said particular energy intervention went straight to desalination plants, the water refinery.
Oil refinery,
which is, yeah, water refinery, oil refinery. A desalination plant is also
that would be your water refinery. If
yeah,
you
water
can
treatment
describe
plant.
It as that.
Water treatment and desalination, and the oil refinery, and oil storage facilities.
Yep, yeah, oil storage source. Yeah, you know, that's where that's where the meth went very tricky now. So.
No, there was no math there. There was just, okay.
Block and block.
No. Yeah. You are punching me. My first flies there. My first flies into Kuwait's face.
Transfer poor Kuwait. Bahrain was threatening Iran. And I'm looking at
And then Pakistan sends 8,000 soldiers to Saudi Arabia. I'm like, what? I thought you were mediating.
There's something about being a soldier that made me laugh. I'm still laughing at what's going on in the Middle East. But back to Africa's, back to Africa's water discussion.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh boy. Well, we are back to the 39th. They made a lot of declarations and decisions that they decided to basically list down and to compile into one document that's 213 pages when they met in February. And I'm talking about the African Union here. Now, when they met and compiled this wonderful document, they did, point out a lot of things that needs attention from African leaders all across the African continent. Things like energy, human rights, and, child marriages. And you have, the Africa's relationship with other regions. Hence, the other day we were talking about Ramaphosa's, a report that he presented to the African Union also at the same, at the same event on some of the discussions that took place at G20?
Yeah,
the G20 in Joburg, yeah. So now this declaration on Africa Water Investment Summit. That sentence alone should have pointed out a couple of things. Water investment, keyword in there, investment.
Mm.
Yeah. Like, my God, are we good at talking? And we interesting enough, always forget that implementation requires money.
Yeah. Oh no. The actual pledge to get to the implementation part,
mm-hmm,
is like two pages down. Because the first two pages, remember the Namibia and South Africa Orange River delegation at SWACOP, which was two pages of
all protocol observed.
Of all protocol observed and who is in attendance.
Uh-huh.
That is two pages in this declarations, resolutions, and decisions document from the AU. That's two pages of, we remember we recall, we reaffirm, we acknowledge.
This in 2026.
In 2026.
Not we implemented.
No. For two pages, they were saying, we were here, we said yes. We were there, we observed. We held another workshop, we identified. We acknowledge, we still stand by a decision. We still notice that we still have a pending decision on another decision. We acknowledge the decision that needs to work from these pending decisions from another decision. For two pages. Before you actually get to the actual, what are we pledging for? And it says, the first one, we pledge to develop a conducive environment in each of our individual countries across the African continent. But yet, we want AFCFTA to take place. And yet, in this morning's, in today's version of the e-paper, Villager e-paper, our front page story says, South Africa and Egypt are dominating intra-African trade. So if you don't have your goats in the kraal, you can't call yourself a farmer. Because if your goats are out lost at sea, nobody else will go and get them for you. Just you.
Look, this whole thing is beginning to sound like most of the forex traders I've met. Where
the Namibian ones, no?
Yeah.
Yeah, the ones that said, I will make you money by tomorrow.
You're like,
how much will you make?
We
don't know. We will see.
Like 200% of your investment. I'll just double it.
And you will say, are you a scammer?
Look, the disturbing thing is there are a lot of people that are falling for that.
Who believe the scam.
I know one guy that was running such an operation.
Please do not implicate yourself.
I was just running such an operation.
Just,
and he was and he was almost punched in the face.
By who?
By his clients. And now, look.
I hope it was not one client delivering.
Oh, it was three of them that showed up.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Awesome. I believe two of them, sisters. They just showed up. I'm like, oh, were you planning on running a family investment here? Now, look, I just sat there, I listened to the whole thing, and I was going, now, in my head, I couldn't help but go, how do people fall for this? 50% investment, 50% return on investment in 1 month. 100% return on investment in 1 month. How many businesses operate like that? Legitimate ones.
I'll answer that question today, Hamut. That question is based on parents who don't have like a financial, like you're supposed as a parent in the modern society today, you're supposed to have the sex talk with your children.
Yeah. Oh no, that never happens.
Tell them the pros and cons. You're supposed to also teach them saliently and undercover how to be financially prudent, how to also identify threats around like your card, scammers around your bank card. The asset forfeiture guys that sometimes hang out around ATMs or like these far-flung, lonely ATM spots, which you even go like, eish, bruh.
Should I even go there?
If I go, stand there. Is there someone not there, somewhere, somewhere there? But the ATM just looks too
easy to ignore.
Just too dodgy. Even the location it's positioned at. So, such particular instances, and then the second scenario, and then the third scenario is also, parents also don't, from what I've also heard saliently, they don't allow the children to experience life. Today's children.
So.
It's not like what we were allowed to do. You go walk there with your buddies. You get beaten.
Get punched in the face.
You get beaten up. You learn to beat back up. You learn to, if one insults your mother, you also insult back with the pretty colorful vocabulary and everything.
Yeah.
And then you have to find out how, you know, your parents are not that kind of individuals who raised you, and you're like thinking to yourself, and that's how you even develop critical thinking yourself. Because you even think to yourself, by that other elder that's coming to tell you rubbish about your parents, you're like, it's about, what do you know about my parents?
My mom or my dad is not like that.
And even worse, you would have gone, you would even feel so offended for the person talking about your parents, because you'll even have like your pride as a young person. You're most always prideful. You'll even ask the question of, yeah, what do you know of my parents? Leave my parents' names out of your mouth. And then another argument spans from there. So
the money discussion and the
sex talk.
The sex talk.
The environment, the overall human environmental talk. It seems that parents are not having that. I am taking a big leap because I cannot back up that statement with concrete national evidence. But what I've observed in the few instances of how people deal with their children, the children are not allowed to go and walk around, interact with society, experience life, make mistakes,
so
come back.
So we are over parenting.
No, over sheltering.
Over sheltering. So
yeah, that's also why, what's the guy's name? Gary Stevenson today says, when young people ask him, because Gary Stevenson, I think he's as old as you, Helmut, he's like 34, 35.
Yeah, somewhere there.
Gary says, every time, because he's was now an experienced person, he's written his book, he's lived his life, he's now living his life, he's now trying to lead this, you know, this global socialist endeavor of taxing the rich in the European and British context, and even an American and Australian context now. But Gary's aim was about, when people ask him, how do I make money, Gary? Because young people, as young men, we were all impressionable, Helmut.
Yeah.
We were all impressed with money, cars, women, everything that's shiny. We are worse than a crow. We like shiny things.
Mm-hmm.
And believe you me, the moment you reach like 31, 32, 33, you start calming down as a man. Don't worry, guys. For some of you that are probably still in the 20s. But the downside, what Gary literally says, every time a 21-year-old guy asks him, because he said a Japanese guy that he used to work with, that he met while he stayed in Japan, when he still worked as a trader, asked him one day, how does he make money? How can he make money quickly? And Gary just answered him straightforward. Listen, if your dad is not a rich guy, loss, my brah. Loss. Loss. He literally told the guy the advice that I'm now giving young people who come and ask me, yeah, how do I become you? Then it's the first side you go like, brah, go live your life. Experience your life.
Okay. Look, one thing I have come to learn, one thing I've come to learn in my language learning journey is that there are a lot of videos, and that's the painful thing, because there are people that are just creating, there are people that are just acting like language teachers, but they're just content creators. Speak Japanese in 30 days.
They're trying to be influencers through trying to teach people a language, but it's more hocus pocus than
Japanese in 30 days.
Then it's actually, you know.
It's not even speak Japanese, be fluent in Japanese in 30 days. Mm. Be fluent in what language are you going to be fluent in 30 days?
There's no such thing.
But believe me.
Unless it's English.
You will learn English.
Unless it's English. And even with English.
No way.
And even with English, people struggle.
You know, the thing about English is, about English, because I like to compare, I like to compare and contrast.
Yeah.
And that's, that's my own language, English and Russian.
Yeah.
And one thing I've come to learn is that, Russian, once you go through the alphabets, it's a very easy language to read. That's the most annoying part of it.
Mm.
Because it's phonetic. You'll be able to read, you can read the entire book, but you won't understand a thing because it's phonetic.
Mm.
For English, for everyone that's non-English speakers, and, especially, as an adult and they're learning English, English is a nightmare when it comes to spelling.
I know. There is there, and then there's there.
Just look at words like center, for example.
Or what the Namibians are writing today.
Center and sender.
Yeah.
Center
and
sender.
Or like what Namibians are writing today. The M. I'm almost there, and you're like, you am? Are you trying to say I am? The abbreviated version is I'm. Like, I will, I'll, I would, I'd, I have, I've.
Yeah, I gave him the thingiki. Now that's Namibian English.
And you're asking, about it then? The thingiki. Yeah. What is a thingiki? No,
it's Namibian English.
That, then they even come up with the other one. That guy thing, man. What? And you're like, what are you talking about?
Look, in comparison to what the Jamaicans and the Nigerians have done to English,
Bumba, I think well.
Hey, don't say that.
Those guys shower.
Don't say that. You'll get us fired. Look,
well, those guys are evil. those Jamaicans, they are evil.
Patois is an awesome language, but anyway, look,
is it what? Patois?
Yeah.
Is that Patois?
Yeah, Patois. Okay. Yeah, that's the language that everyone thinks they are fluent in every time they smoke weed. And now,
okay, let's stop with the jokes.
Okay, yeah, right. Let's stop with the jokes. So, let's go through some of the promises made from which year? From 2008.
Yeah.
2008.
And we are still in the decade of water with the UN.
Okay, now from the time when I was in grade 8 and trying to survive high school, that was brutal. Like, you know, I think that's a good learning. You know, I think the, you know, to prevent overparenting, to prevent overparenting and overprotecting. That's why I like hostels. Just send them to the hostel. Mm. They will master how to survive on their own. So, believe me, hostels are brutal. So,
I actually don't want to do that, Helmut.
Hmm?
I actually don't want to. I told myself once, I'll never send my child also to a hostel if I've never experienced hostel life.
Wait, you have never experienced hostel life?
Yeah. I'd rather
Boy,
go live.
Did you dodge a bullet?
I'd rather go live somewhere in solitary confinement away from the madness that happens in hostels. I've only heard the stories.
Hostel.
I've only heard the stories.
Man, the spaces I could fit in, not by choice. Declaration on the African Water, on the Africa Water Investment Summit. Yeah. We heads, now this was this year, we heads of state and government of the African Union assembled on the 15th of February 2026, the 39th ordinary session in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Endorse the annexed declaration of the Africa Water Investment held in Cape Town, South Africa from 13 to 15 August 2025. Now, Ash, let's go to the recalling now, Sha. Just have to prepare my mind on this one. Recalling, we are recalling the commitment of the African Union heads of state and government in July of 2008.
Yep, there it is, Hamoud. July
2008. At the Sharm el-Sheikh Declaration of Water and Sanitation, which seeks to accelerate the achievement of water and sanitation goals in Africa. Africa by land mass is massive, and Africa has a lot of water sources, fresh water sources. The thing is, when you bring that discussion into fresh water, fresh, clean, healthy drinking water, it becomes a whole different discussion. It's either, you know, then you have a lot of hindrances in most countries, you know, in countries that are at war, you're talking about political instability component.
Mm.
So they are, you know, that restricts well access to water. And in semi-arid countries like, like Namibia, our discussion would be much interesting to have because we don't have a lot of surface water, at least, in comparison to underground water. Underground water do we have it in, I want to say in spades, but it's water, so it's not going to work. So we have a lot of it. Now, we are faced with a question of, how do you solve Namibia's water problem, especially for consumption and agriculture? Can you tap into the underground water? That is not a guarantee because, not all the places that we're going to dig is going to have water that is consumable. The chances are very high that some parts are going to be salty. And the salty water is not good for consumption because your kidneys are not going to like that. So when every time the question overall is every time that we sit to talk about the, you know, to have these conferences, do we first make plans of how are we going to implement it, especially in terms of money? Which is why I started with which is why I started with the 2024 Kenya's agreement that they made in 2024 in Washington during Ruto's visit in 2024, that they are going to build a data center in Kenya.
Mm.
And shouldn't they have done the math of the size of, you know, how much energy does Kenya have available in terms of, how much of it do they have for consumption?
Mm.
And how much of it will be consumed by the data center that they're planning on building? Because they ended up building one that would have taken up a third of the national energy, the annual energy, national energy consumption. And so they had to call off the whole project in 2026.
Mm.
From 2024, $1 billion project. Now, if you ask me, shouldn't they have done the math before doing the announcement?
Which is also a scenario of interests, because obviously when announcing a data center, you're obviously, as a president, trying to invite certain companies to come to your country. I'm reading now, back in 2022... Or is this, 2022, 2023, but it's dated here, 2022. It's the report, the final report on the World Water Conference that the UN hosted in 2023,
mm-hmm.
which Africa submitted a report for as well, the high-level report. I'm reading now here.
High-level.
Yeah. I'm reading now here in the summary of the addresses from the heads of states and governments that is part of this discussion, where the president of Bolivia back then said, that the world and his country should recognize water or access to water as a fundamental right to life. Why did he recognize this? It's because he identified that there is something known as a water war happening, for example, like in South America, in which people demanded prioritization of their rights over the interests of private companies. Now, there was an instance, Helmut, here in Namibia, where a French company owned one of Namibia's, one of Windhoek's reservoirs.
Private company?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
There was also a scenario, obviously, I told you many times before, of the desalination plant at Swakop, the one where the...
Was that the Arriva one?
Yeah, the Arriva one, where they're trying to sell that to the government for $2 billion Namibian dollars. And the government obviously said no back then. I now hear from people who live in Swakop that literally Swakop runs on borehole water. And in the broader scheme of things regarding like uranium exploration, uranium mining and all that, with the accusation here in Omaheke supposedly is that contamination of the water, of the underground water source is apparently the aim of the proponent, the exploration company,
mm-hmm.
but if you go to the coast, which is close to a coastline, protected national park areas, as well as also that there is an aquifer close to Erongo, it just branches into Erongo.
Yeah.
And even though I ask people directly, and I ask the environmental commissioner as well, isn't open pit mining a threat to underground water as well? Because there is an aquifer that's in close proximity of... Because how does Swakop get groundwater, have access to borehole groundwater? How does Swakop have access to groundwater? And you've got five...
just digging.
And you've got drilling. 5 or 6 to 7 mines...
Around there.
Around Swakop. But suddenly, the water is... There's nothing wrong with the water. The groundwater that they're drinking. And even though I asked this when the environmental commissioner had his the IAEA media engagement back in February, even though I asked that question, people were like, they were quick to like shrug it off. But no one identifies. It's the same scenario like what this NGO is claiming here in the east of the country in terms of water contamination or the threat of water contamination. But when you go and sit and think logically, You have five mines around a tourist town and tourist sites and activities and places and national parks. But for some reason, somehow, the mining doesn't impact those activities, nor the water. A concern, obviously, which is easily brushed off, but it seems like no one is looking into it. My scientific thinking is obviously not at that advanced level, but it's a logical hypothesis that many Namibians in this landscape have to ask each other. The second scenario is also one, Helmut, where we've got to look at in the broader scheme of things, because the discussion, for example, here of what this Bolivian president mentioned back in 2023 with the water war. Mining companies need a ton of water, just like you highlighted with digital and technology companies.
Yeah.
They need a ton of water and electricity, access to electricity.
Yeah.
The ECB allows a mining company to negotiate electricity rates directly with the ECB. It's not that the mine buys through a town or a regional council. The mine can negotiate directly with the ECB or with NAMPA or whoever the two government proponents are. So at least we know there is that aspect. They can negotiate directly. Another dimension to also consider when we're looking at water use, access to water, and also if you have to now scope in overall utilities like electricity negotiation, you also identify the lasting environmental damage. Lasting environmental damage. Tsumeb has that massive gaping hole in the middle of the town. No one talks about it. We covered the OIS report with the various cavities that the community is afraid of, because if it's not their livestock falling in, it's they themselves falling in. But it seems like for years, the Ministry of Mines is not doing anything.
It's just there like.
It's not doing anything about it.
The whole quote unquote illegal lithium mining. I'm still really glad that the Standing Committee on Natural Resources basically went there. Was that the Natural Resources Standing Committee, right?
Mm.
Yeah, I'm so glad they basically went there to meet the people on the ground and try as much as possible to iron things out.
Mm.
And one of the finding that that came out of that report that I find fascinating was which points to the Ministry of Environment and mines lack of regulation, because one of the things that the report pointed out was that there are a lot of pits that were left by the previous occupiers in terms of of carrying out all the mining activity, which now the new guys that that were operating there had to be blamed for.
Which is a communication issue.
If the rehabilitation was well overseen by both the Mines and Environment Ministry, those two entities, one was Chinese, one was Namibian, and all the tension, I don't think much of that would have, would have been raised, because one of the biggest, if not the biggest concern was the animals falling into those pits.
Yeah.
And the two companies that were operating there, when the Natural Resource Standing Committee asked them what is going on, they were like, look, we didn't dig those pits. We found them there. That means the previous guys that did it, they left those pits unrehabilitated.
Mm.
That points to regulation gaps, man. Commercial break.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, you know, as people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared. Laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager. Now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. Just a minute past the hour of five. If you're just in here listening to Home Run with Hemd and Dwight on Eagle FM, as always, here to keep you company until the hour of six. And like I said yesterday, the line is open for you to participate in the discussion here on Eagle FM. The line is 083-288-401. Now, what was that? The pits that were found.
Yeah.
That is, you know, that to me is pointing to regulation issues, because if there was a regulation, if the previous, mining entity that was there was regulated from its, from the beginning of its activities all the way to rehabilitation, they would have been told to basically rehabilitate the whole thing. But that's not surprising, because I've it's public knowledge. We have about, last time I checked, we have about 50 plus something.
Open. No, it's 200.
Wait, what?
That number that you and I read 2 weeks back was 200 unrehabilitated mining sites.
Again, that to, at least to me, points to one thing: regulation issues. Now, the president of Bolivia. Wait, when was that?
This was back in 2020. It's dated 2022, but they're talking about the 2023 conference.
2023. No, I'm not sure if the president of Bolivia was still is it Evo Morales?
Evo Morales. Evo.
Evo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Evo Morales.
You say it as if there is an H there, but it's Evo.
Evo Morales.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I like the, you know, the fact that he chose to use the word water wars, because Bolivia went through that in 2000. Mm. Because their water infrastructure in a town called Cochabamba was just what you'd see in a lot of publicly managed infrastructure. It was dilapidated. Mm. So they thought it was a brilliant idea to hand the infrastructure to a private company, Bechtel, an American private company. That company basically took the infrastructure, revamped it from the ground up, and everything was shiny. Mm. So they are now just trying to get their return on investment.
Yeah.
So, like everything else, when you privatize, the prices go through the roof, because the private entity serves shareholders. So, because the prices went through the roof, a lot of locals, a lot of residents of that town, they weren't happy about it. So, a lot of them decided to resort to collecting rainwater, because the tap water was just too expensive, even though the infrastructure was now working just fine. The whole thing, now the very same company lobbied through different ways to the authorities in that area, and later to the government overall, to pass a law that made it illegal to collect rainwater. That's when the residents of Cochabamba were like, you know what, that's enough. There was a riot. A bunch of people were killed in the process. I think that was in 2000. At the end of the day, the government was basically pressured by the locals to take back the infrastructure, and they terminated their contract with Bechtel.
I have a sneaking suspicion Africa is close to such a particular scenario.
You know what they called that?
What?
Water wars.
Yeah, because I have a sneaking suspicion, Hamoud, Africa is possibly close to something like that. It always, when it starts off in South America, it is not long until something spills
over. You find it in the U.S. Africa.
Yeah. Just before we stepped into the studio, I saw something on one of my social media platforms, specifically on Facebook. Facebook has all these interesting particular pages that you can follow. They give you like infographics and interesting things to look at. And I came across one about savannas in central to southern Africa, that how they call it a biome. The natural environment where an animal lives in is a biome.
Yeah.
So a biome includes the soil, the grass, the plant types, which includes the grass as well, and all the other kinds of animals that you would find alongside the animals in that scenario, is that the biome known as the savanna is rapidly vanishing, because it's now converted into farmland. Now, when I looked at the platform's name, it's based in New York. its address and everything.
Mm-hmm.
The concern from this particular conversation has been, I'm also looking at what's happening in Namibia through mm-hmm. the environmental protection, these in protection NGOs. It's got nothing to do with the community-based resource management endeavors. That's obviously endorsed by the Ministry of Environment. But in a scenario of looking at when do we as Africans enjoy the natural environment that we live in? We obviously have the issue regarding farming and mining competing in our national development agenda with the needs of a lot of people. I'll say it again. Farming and mining are competing alongside other human activities for the same resource, access to land. Now, this is where things get a little bit interesting, Helmut, because if the farm is owned by a private individual with a title deed to the farm, to the land,
yeah,
technically, you don't know what's going on that farm.
Yeah.
That guy could be drilling all the boreholes. He wouldn't have to subscribe to the, what's the thing's name? To the Water Act, the Water Management Act of 2013, which was used against the Head Springs people, as the report by the Standing Committee of Natural Resources outlines. And the concern is also a scenario of if you go into communal land areas, which are in its own right a free-for-all setting because everyone is now accessing the same resource but basically with the same agricultural activity, which also damages the soil, technically, and the land. Now, our concern from this is suddenly somewhere in a London office or in a European office or in a New York office, because it's always from New York, and if it's from the US, things start becoming troubling, is that these guys are close to lobbying groups, meaning they are close to money that can lobby.
Yeah.
And I've been warned in a conversation I've had with someone, there is no one as powerful as the environmental lobby outside of Africa. Not even the oil lobby is as powerful as the environmental lobby.
Jeez.
So the environmental lobby is a pretty powerful foe to have if you're an African country. Because as an African country, you're trying to experience your growth pains. Look, Germany experienced its growth pains. France experienced its growth pains. The same for Britain. The same for the United States.
And that's a step we think we can skip.
And China experienced its growth pains. Japan as well.
Yeah.
But if you are looking at the concern of how in Namibia with its two deserts, do we try to juggle industrial development, overall societal-based welfare programs?
Digital skills.
Digital developments and transformations. And then also adopting a just energy transition template.
Eesh, that's the painful part.
All these things are various layers, and then throw in there minerals resource beneficiation, how to discover. We're still trying to discover how to do minerals resource beneficiation.
Yeah.
But every time when I've, from the Eco Dialogue at the start of the year that was hosted by IPPR up to another platform, I asked two different panel discussions. If you guys are trying to find the missing link or a template to how to actually derive actual benefit from a resource that's mined out of the ground, why has no one looked at the Alaska fund?
Alaska model of making the people on the ground benefit more directly than just through contributing. Yeah, they are contributing to the overall country's national revenue.
Because I'll tell you now, Helmut. Namibia, the Namibian government probably earns more from the taxes that Namibians pay than from the diamond sales.
Huh?
I'll tell you now.
Actually, yeah.
Namibia probably, the government probably earns more from collecting from other sectors, It's regular tax collection activities, then it actually collects from diamond sales. Now, if diamond sales, which is referenced every time when we have to look at the, when we look into the national budget announcement, if diamond sales is continuously referenced as being, it's been underperforming, it's been sluggish, why have the diamond proceeds, no matter their size, been just taken as is, so that every Namibian benefits from diamond sales, put in the sovereign wealth fund, and then that sovereign wealth fund asks every Namibian, please come and register with us. Mm-hmm. If you are above the age of 18, if you can prove that you don't have a criminal record, so meaning that you have to go apply and the police have to verify that you are not that you don't have a criminal background, and you go and apply and you are asked, come and you will pay, you will be paid proceeds of this money of diamond sales of the government per month for the rest of your life, as long as you prove every year that you are crime-free. A law-abiding citizen. You don't have to prove that you're a tax-paying citizen. Just be a law-abiding citizen.
Yeah. Don't have a criminal record.
You will see greater change.
Watch people behave.
You will see greater change because there's an actual incentive in place.
Yeah, there's an incentive to run away from fights.
Yeah. Helmut, Namibia has 3 million people, ne?
Mm-hmm.
Ne? I want you to ask, what's the population size of Alaska? 740,000.
Really?
That's almost a third of Namibia. Alaska is probably the size of Namibia. 740,000.
In terms of landmass?
In terms of landmass.
But the population?
740,000 people in Alaska.
Holy cow.
And much of Alaska is like wild terrain.
And a lot of snow.
No, not snow. It's just rocky, foresty.
Wait, they don't have a lot of snow.
No, when the winter comes.
Oh, when winter comes, that's
then what. It's then just stay at home.
Yeah. Now, you know, it's a good thing you went the direction of Africa's well, the Cochabamba example that I gave, that a chance of very high it can start popping up in Africa.
Mm.
Yeah. Think it maybe not with regards to water, but land wise. Chances are very high.
Mm.
Yeah, I know. Chances are very high. We are already knees deep.
That is the Alaska Permanent Fund's current value. This is on its website. The company that runs the fund on behalf of every citizen of Alaska.
$89 billion.
US dollars.
I would also be a law abiding citizen with an amount of money like that I have access to, or more like I get a share of every end of the year, as long as I just stay away from trouble.
Celebrating 50 years. It's not big, but it pays out.
Yeah, it does.
It pays out. Now I ask you. I don't have denim blue eyes. But I ask you with the tears and those fake denim blue eyes that I don't occupy. How is it possible that this country can achieve the goals that it is achieving? Not a country, this territory that it is achieving on behalf of Alaskans. This is probably the only part of the United States that I am proud of. That I'm proud of talking about. And you know, Helmut, they've actually had multiple disputes with the residents of Alaska where the local politicians wanted to give the administration of the fund to the likes of like BlackRock and all those other hedge fund operators and administrators.
Yeah, that's a bit of
and idea. Every time they had to put it like you noted with the Swiss, take it to a referendum.
Yeah, the people were like, yeah, no.
And now in Alaskan state law, they must have a referendum about every major decision that impacts them. And there's a literally a disclaimer about the permanent funds administration. They must put it to vote. And all the Alaskans, the only question they always ask, if you are going to give it to these Wall Street operators, are we still going to get our payouts? And every time the politicians say, no, you won't get those payouts anymore, immediately the public goes and says, okay, then to hell with your suggestion. We vote no.
Like, why did you even bring it to us at this point?
Because obviously that's just what the Hamoud, what you don't realize in the world of finance now, in the world of finance, nah. It's one thing I learned, for example, that like the cons and the scams that, like the example of the Forex trader guy that you mentioned, nah, the scammer, that scamming guy.
Yes, a Forex trader, very legitimate. They just fell for it.
No, he's not legitimate.
I say people, definitely not.
But the actual legitimate system, nah, they see accumulation of money across the world. There was a guy that I followed, that I listened to some of his lectures on YouTube as well, when these Forex guys were popping up now here in Namibia, and people were talking about they're a Forex trader.
Mm-hmm.
There's even like online templates and companies online that help you with Forex trading. Now, America is so slim, the United States, they actually blocked all Europeans, Russians, and Chinese from being Forex traders in the US. Even if you're like a middleman agency, there's a few companies like that, like IQ Option, and there's another one. It's IQ Option, and there's another one that I tried investigating, you know, like, how does it work?
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is, what those guys do is, they are the ones that own the trading license across the world. You don't own the trading license, because if you had to be to have a license as a trader, nah, you would have had to apply for that license from the Bank of Namibia and the Namibian Stock Exchange. And then you would have to provide credentials in terms of why they need to give you a trading license, which is a very difficult thing, which is a serious sort of like qualification to have and certification, because again, it will also mean it's the closest that if you make the most incorrect decision in your life, you are in jail. Even before you can think of fish rot, you are just immediately incarcerated. It's also as if you automatically will be found guilty. Just by knowing that the trades were under your name, it's the quickest you'll be arrested.
Or they'll be like for fraud now, for example.
Yeah, because you lost money. Now, here's another particular perspective also to take on this discussion. Yeah? So, the BlackRock guys and all those things, they obviously see the various reports that the American government generates regarding pension funds, regarding whatever other funds and stuff they have. And these are just things that are just accumulating money every day. Every day. It's like in China. China has something like 3 sovereign wealth funds. The number 2 in the world is most a Chinese one. The first one is most the one from...
The Norwegians.
No, it's not the Norwegians. I think it's...
I thought the Norwegians were...
Well, it's grown now to be number 1. Yeah. But for a long time, it was the Saudi one. And there was a Kuwaiti one. And there's a Qatar one. UAE one.
The Kuwait, how could I forget those?
And then there's China. But China's one has been there for a long time. That the first one. And in the top 20, China has the other 2. So, the role that the sovereign wealth funds for China play in China's economy is that technically they are used to stimulate economic activity. Like what a sovereign wealth fund's actual aim is, to either stimulate or you save money like a savings account for rainy days in your account, in your economy.
Mm.
But to stimulate sometimes means you use that money to do your mass housing project. You use that money to buy emergency supplies during, let's say, a COVID period. You use that money to respond to, let's say, a disaster, a natural disaster that happened in your country. And every time that money is fallback money, is emergency money. But sovereign wealth funds, Helmut, also accumulate interest. They grow naturally. Not just the pay-ins that it gets,
yeah,
but it also accumulates things. It's not just money that sits still. It doesn't just, and it doesn't accumulate any. It actually earns interest.
Okay, take the what's this? Take the Alaskan one, for example.
Yeah.
Is it invested in different investment streams for them to make a good return investment to boost up the numbers, or is it just sitting there and waiting for every end of the year to disperse a certain amount of it?
Well, it says here it's a constitutionally established permanent and sovereign wealth fund. So it's a permanent fund and a sovereign wealth fund. It plays a dual role. The difference between the two is that a permanent fund is one of the five types of governmental fund types established by accounting. There's an accounting standard, and it's a legally restricted to dispersing investment money only.
Jeez.
So it never disperses the principal money, the main money that
yeah, the put, principal amount, yeah.
It only disperses investment income.
That's it.
That's it. So investment income probably means if it has to invest in something, then it has to pay it back. But never the principal money. Never the original invested amount or placed amount in the account. Now, the other aspect of it is that it has its sovereign wealth fund dimension. But they mentioned it was established in Alaska in 1976, so it's one of the oldest in the world. Section 15 of the Alaska State Constitution under the governor at the time, Jay Hammond, and the attorney general at the time, Avram Gross, which obviously established it. And from 76 until April 1980, the Department of Revenue Treasury Division managed the state's permanent fund assets until 1980 in Alaska, where the Alaska State Legislature actually created this fund company, this corporation, the APFC. However, I want to show you the last payout in terms of its dividends. The last payout that it actually had.
For last year.
For last year, which is 2025. I just want to see. Yeah, so 2025, each resident in Alaska, those that obviously received it,
yeah.
And remember, this is non-taxable. It's a non-taxable amount.
Jeez, it's tax-free.
And under a certain threshold, it's non-taxable. They got like $1,000 last year, but you got it like not every month at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So the nice thing is, there's obviously been controversies. For example, it mentions here the issues with the permanent fund was that it generally generated large surpluses even after payments of the dividends. And the state general fund also operated at a substantial deficit as well. So the consolidated account of both the general and the permanent funds usually showed a surplus, meaning it was accumulating so much money.
Mm-hmm.
Like you also now see, it was at $85 billion since 1976. Since 1976, this thing has just been accumulating money and interest. And the fund's ultimate uses were never clearly spelled out at its inception, leaving no current consensus over what role the fund earnings should play in the current and also expected state budget shortfalls if the local government, which is the state government of the United States,
yeah,
of Alaska, the state government of Alaska, not the federal government of America,
of the United States, yeah,
the state government, yeah, of Alaska. If it has like budgeting shortfalls,
yeah,
can it borrow against the fund? Because that's also not clearly stated. But not that it should be an issue, because it still means that if you live within the boundaries of your region or your state or your province, your provincial government needs to access financing for it to meet its operational needs, right?
Yeah.
And its development needs, right? Which is a given. I sometimes don't understand how some people in this world think that a government doesn't have like additional or miscellaneous costs that pop up. It's like a house. You see it in your house, Hammer. You even see it with yourself. You know, today you were really, really angling for that six pack of beer, but you did not know that that $50 that you put taking out for that six pack impacts cab money at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Just before payday. Which has happened. You and I, we know that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
We know that. So I still don't understand where people come up with this idea that the budgeting
must be spot on.
For public entities are like spot on. You know that there will be no miscellaneous things coming.
Yeah, no unforeseen circumstances.
There won't be a natural disaster somewhere in the future. It's as if people sit with a crystal ball and they can literally predict the future, which we clearly cannot.
Nah, you can't.
Oh, about futures and dimensions. Did you know that there's a research facility, Helmut, in the Swiss Alps, in Switzerland, known as CERN? It's like the American, the American DARPA?
Oh.
DARPA.
Oh,
project.
Hang on a second.
The Europeans have CERN.
I don't
and America has DARPA.
CERN as in the Large Hadron Colliders.
Yeah. The guys that run that, the Hydrogen Collider.
Yeah.
Did you hear that they apparently discovered realities?
Realities as in?
That there are 17 realities.
Like dimension?
Dimensions.
Sci-fi type?
Yes. Have you ever heard of that thing?
No, really. Look, I've known about CERN for a while. I think I started reading about those guys since high school, I believe. And, they have this giant round particles accelerator, the biggest in the world, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And where they basically blast atoms at, godly speed. And as part of their scientific experiments, there's a lot of science-sciencey, and these are huge magnetic machines.
It's the size of, of half a Windhoek.
Yeah, it runs
it's like 8 kilometers in dimension, underground, and they use it literally to run their tests.
There's a lot of science going on at CERN. I started reading about them in high school, and it started, popping up when the Big Bang Theory came up.
Yeah.
And they're
literally trying to replicate that as well.
CERN.
Yeah.
Replicated where?
In that same facility.
Oh yeah, like the, my problem with my problem with human beings is we are always paranoid.
Oh,
that's our problem. And even if there was take for example extraterrestrial life out there, and we found them.
Yeah.
If you look at every movie of extraterrestrial life, what's the first thing humans do when they come into contact with them? They want to conduct scientific experiments.
Of course, we are most curious.
Exactly, that's the problem.
We are curious.
That's the problem. When Europeans first popped up on the African continent, the first thought anthropologists went bananas.
Yeah.
They had their vernia calipers measuring people's nose length. Like, look, we're nuts. If you ask me, there's a reason why aliens don't want to even look at our.
Have you ever seen how a bunch of guys usually look at like a wild animal? They go like, "I wonder what the meat will taste like."
Oh yeah, that. That's your first.
And then you sit there looking at these fellow humans like, is that the first thing you're talking about? Yeah, I just want to know what the meat tastes like. I'm like, my goodness.
Talk
about being a carnivore.
When it comes to Africa, it's not just the water discussion or energy discussion. Everything on the African continent, what we saw with the...
Why we have Ebola.
Because
people are thinking like that.
Just popped up again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you hear that they burnt down the medical facility that contained one of the victims? And the family wanted to come collect the victim.
Africa. Commercial break.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared. Laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager. Now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengelo wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoewe ekukulile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili nehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Kono ngeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doinawa nune ujo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeje pa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijabwiri nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. 29 to the hour of 6. You're still listening to Home Run, and still no one is going to complain to Dwight during the weekend. No, you know what? Well, you didn't go. Dwight, if anyone complains, they didn't call. Now,
on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
No, they complained this morning. You know who you are, Mandume? Angobana?
Oh.
I'm just letting you guys know. I did share and convey the message to my partner. There's Helmut. He does know of the feedback.
Yeah, and you're welcome. So, you know, when it comes to Africa's overall development, I'm mindful of the fact that there is a mismanagement or corruption, if you want to call it that. Mm. It's everywhere. But the thing is, it's either the lack of legislation or the lack of enforcement of the legislations in place. These two things, it's either on purpose, lack of knowledge, or just for exploitation, whatever the reasons are. These two problems, like what we have seen with the quote-unquote illegal lithium mining, and I keep saying quote-unquote because it was the report coming out of the Standing Committee found that there was no illegal mining going on.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's the report. If you disagree with that, call the parliament. Now, the thing is, especially the pits that created the whole chaos, the pits that were left by the previous, by the previous miners, who obviously had, just left them like that because they saw a loophole of lack of regulation.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one was, basically following up, sort of like keeping up with them to make sure that they are rehabilitating in, in ways, they are living in a way that, that is a formal, that makes for an formal exit for a mining entity.
Yeah.
So because of that lack of, because of that lack of regulation, they just took off. And if you ask me, they didn't need to know the, rehabilitation legislations in Namibia and whether or not they're enforced. All they had to do is look at how many unrehabilitated mines we have across the country. And they were like, you know what? That's the standard here. Just leave. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
And the new guys that went to operate, they now had to, had to face all the PR chaos that came, all the local, resentment and the PR chaos that came along with it.
Mm-hmm.
That overall picture can be spread all across the African continent. And I'll give you an example. Earlier this year, or was that, that started last year, Marriott Group of Hotels.
Yeah.
They opened a facility in parts of the Masai Mara area. That's the major crossing for all animals when they are going, for animals in that region when they are mostly moving from, from the Serengeti side of Tanzania, from the Serengeti in Tanzania to Marmara in Kenya.
Yeah.
So that is a known, internationally known migratory route. They decided to build a whole facility. Now, when animals were just following their standard migratory patterns, the tourists who were like occupying one area, they were, they were sort of like shouting at the animals to basically chase them to go back.
Mm.
That video went viral.
Mm.
Now, everyone now, especially as you'd expect African, pan-Africans, they just decided to go straight to white people. And like, you can't be that stupid.
Yeah.
White people, this neo-colonialism, we are not asking the right questions here. This is a piece of infrastructure that was built here.
Mm.
They have building permits. Who gave them the permit?
The government.
Yeah, when you look at that it from a permit standpoint, you begin to realize that the problem is more in the house.
Yeah.
Not outside. Someone gave them the permit. And this is someone who is obviously, who was born, most likely born and raised in Kenya. They know that part is a major migratory migratory path. Why would you give someone a permit to set up a piece of infrastructure that would be constantly be full, you know, occupied by people on a piece of land that is a known migratory path? Someone, that's a, look, what I basically told them in the comment section, guys, someone out there, I don't know if they, you know, if they understood the joke. I was like, someone out there in the Kenyan government is driving a license plate, you know, a Range Rover with a Mara 1.
Oh, is no, Helmut, no.
Maasai 1. Look, the,
why did you involve a Namibian pun into a Kenyan pun?
I'm Namibian. Look, the thing is, it's a legislation flaw. You can blame Marriott Hotel, Marriott Group of Hotels. You can blame those tourists, but you are just blaming the symptoms. The main disease is sitting in Parliament.
Driving a Mara 1.
Yeah, Mara 1.
Maasai 1.
Look, at some point, I'm.
What is the Namibian number plate again?
Oil 1.
Oil 1?
NA.
You know, it's actually funny that we haven't seen copper 1 and uranium 1.
Because the copper and uranium guys are not that dumb. Look at
this. They know that they need yellow number plates.
Now, can you imagine Shangala before Fisher driving around with mackerel 1? How. Okay, now this is getting out of hand.
Oh my goodness. Or if one of the gold companies, the gold mining companies, one of the CEOs had the number plate Gold 1.
Gold 1?
Just Gold 1. That's all.
Well, as long as you don't, you know, start spilling the beans in front of Al Jazeera. So.
True. And yeah. Demanding for technology that doesn't exist for Africa.
Yep.
Like, deal some God.
Yeah, and demanding for them to help you settle your $200,000 in you know, farming expenses arrears. How the heck do you even come up to that amount? But what do I know about farming? I don't even own a plot of land.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it all comes down to one thing, legislation. And I think Africans, we should now begin to start looking at things from that standpoint. I would actually recommend that every time that we are running into problem on the African continent, let's just look at let's look at the overall picture.
Mm-hmm.
What legislative process does one have to go through, for example, to build this facility on this piece of land?
Mm-hmm.
And who is in charge of of giving all the authorization that one needs to reach at this point? Because a lot of people are only complaining after the facility has to be built. And it has to be opened for it to be in operation. They built that whole thing and everyone's like, the locals were not happy about it. The locals have not been happy about it. One of the leaders of the Maasai, of the Maasai tribe, I think has been at odds, to some degree in and out of court.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because of, because he's not a huge fan of the whole facility being built. The fact that this thing have reached court.
Should tell
everyone that this is not a Marriott Hotel problem.
This was not a squeaky clean deal.
Nope.
Something was signed somewhere and someone sold it off. Which is one of the concerns, Ahmed, because it's a mentality and it's a perspective I've always heard about even since my days in Rehoboth. And I've heard that you also find this in some parts of rural Namibia, other parts of rural Namibia where some Namibians will say, there was a phrase that they used in Rehoboth. This is my town. I will wherever I want to. You can just fill in the expletives. That was literally the sentence in Afrikaans. And you actually discover the same mentality in many parts of Namibia, except for where it comes to private commercial land. Now, if it's if it's a thing of looking at an African mentality around African ownership,
mm-hmm.
we have a big issue in actually first consolidating that. And it's one of the things I actually like about the land bill. Remember when we did it last year?
Yeah.
That the aim of the land bill is to actually prevent the transfer or the sale of, even if it's private and commercial, agricultural land to foreigners. I actually like that ideal. I actually like that perspective. I really love it. However, the land bill is still in debating phase, and there is still private land in Namibia being transferred to foreigners. And much of these foreigners are South African, or they are American, or they are British, or they are French, or they are German. They're not even Namibian Germans. They're foreign Germans.
Germans.
Or they're Russians, or they're Chinese.
Jeez.
And in many cases, these are people that are not Namibians. And it negates Namibia's overall national agendas. It literally negates it. But if you now go to Russia, Helmut, and you want to go buy a land in Russia, you'll be told, no, Helmut, go and ask for land in Africa. You'll even be told, go to Africa and ask for land there, not in Russia.
I have a feeling they'll just sell me a plot of land in Siberia because they know I'm not going to last
there. And then a pick won't work in that. The permafrost is not a joke. Permafrost is not a joke.
That place is...
You should see what happens to the houses in Yakutsk. Yeah, there were the Yakutia people stay. Helmut, when it comes to summer, they only have 3 months of summer. They only have 3 months where the sun shines. The other 9 months, it's just dark skies, cloudy skies, overcast, and just winter. For that 3 months, Helmut, the permafrost in the soil, so it gets so soggy, your house literally sinks. Or the foundation of your house literally sinks or sags on one side.
And that's in summer when the temperatures increase.
Yeah. What also happens, they had, the Russian government had in the 70s and the 80s, also a mass housing initiative, specifically for the other cities throughout the Russian, the Soviet Union specifically, where contractors had to, local contractors had to rapidly respond to booming urban centers, obviously, urban to rural to urban migration trends. And they also had to come up with quick solutions to build. Now, Russians are just like the rest of those North Europeans, like the Scandinavian countries and Canada and America, where they build with wood.
Yeah.
They build the whole house out of wood.
Yeah.
It's a Helmut. In Yakutia or Yakutsk, the moment it becomes summer, that wooden house, your house literally
leans
to the one side. It looks like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Your house leans to the one side, or it sags to the front as the permafrost melts, and then the soil becomes soft and mushy. It's like a muddy spongy representation.
I think I'd like that place during winter.
You don't want to feel the winter, Hamut. You have a front door, ne? Imagine the studio door that we've got here for you see that space?
The inside or outside one?
No, I'm explaining to you now. Okay. You see that space, ne? Between the two doors.
Yeah.
Ne? Imagine the first door is still where it is. You take the second door and you put it here where the window is. This is your insulation space to prevent you from being frozen to death.
Every home in Africa is a melting pot of memories around the table. The steady stir of Njima by the fire. The sizzle of Kapana on open coals. From Luanda to Lusaka, Windhoek to Gaborone. Different languages, different stories. And at the center of it all, a table. A table where culture is shared, where heritage is celebrated, where families gather, traditions are passed down, and every meal is a memory. Africa Day, ShopRite is proud to celebrate the families, the flavors, and the stories that make every meal so special. ShopRite, lower prices you can trust, always.
Welcome back, 15 minutes.
You were actually supposed to say all the diplomacy has to take place in daytime hours.
Yeah, you're right. That makes
negotiations.
Makes it to sound very diplomatic. I mean,
this is off microphone talk, guys.
Not how we get into trouble, you know, with Crane, seeing that they have already summoned Telecom. So we don't want to be the next.
Poor Telecom.
Yeah, poor Telecom. After Hunters International, now they have to deal with. Let's take a life read before I basically get to my next point of blaming the legislatures on the African continent, not just in Namibia. Vilvicha University 2026 July applications are now open. Faculty of Health Sciences, a postgraduate diploma in community health nursing level 8. Admission requirements: have a recognized nursing qualification at NQF level 7 or higher from any recognized higher learning institution. Must be a registered nurse / midwife with the Nursing Council of Namibia HPCNA. Must have a minimum of 2 years working experience as a nurse / midwife in any health facility. Must write a short essay describing the motivation of pursuing postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration 1 year. Mode of delivery full time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Vilvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. So let's get to now back to my point of the legislation issues, just as we wrap up. One of the topics that I found interesting that came out of COP28, which took place in the UAE in 2023, it was revealed that the UAE was buying up portions of land all across the African continent in different countries. Now there are two countries that were basically name dropped, Tanzania and Zimbabwe.
Yeah. Because of the carbon credit. Yeah, the carbon credit system.
Which
was also proven to be a little bit problematic.
The carbon credit system to me sounds like what your church did with selling indulgences. Sounds pretty much. Pope Links, the second.
Hey, listen, I'll take it any day. You just won't see me in public.
Yeah, and goodbye. So you are not doing public, and you are not participating in the whole celibacy discussion.
Definitely not.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Celibacy discussions.
It's nowhere on God's green earth. Look, I want to go to heaven, but not that much. One thing that came out was that out of COP28 was that the heights of a vast stretch of Africa's forest are being sold off in a series of huge carbon offsetting deals that cover an area of land larger than the UK. That's coming from the Guardian, hence the UK reference. And then it goes on to say that the deals made by a little known member of Dubai's royal family encompasses up to 22% of the country's concerned, and have raised concern about the new scramble for Africa. Then they go on. The good thing is there are a few high, now, if you just find the document online, you'll find that the main source, it's hyperlinked to something known as a Gulf News, and that's based in Gulf News. It's based in the Gulf region.
Definitely.
Yeah. And that's where you find the Dubai and the UAE. Now, so far, the deals cover, and this is from 2023, put that in mind. So far, the deals cover a fifth of Zimbabwe, 10% of Liberia, 10% of Zambia, and 8% of Tanzania, amounting to a total area of the size of the UK. And in October of 2023, Blue Carbon signed its largest deal for millions of hectares of forest in Kenya. Blue Carbon is the company that was now used to acquire all these, all these portions of land. Now, look, obviously, there are arrangements that government can reach in terms of raising money for the country. But the thing about land is the duration, 99 years that you're talking about here. So if you find out you now 2-3 years down the line, you now need a portion of land to for the benefit of the people, after you already signed a 99-year agreement with someone, you can't just show up and start changing the laws to kick them out.
Well, you technically can, but you will be blacklisted as a government at international platforms.
There you go.
Because basically you will be deemed as someone who regularly goes back on their word.
Yeah.
Well, Donald Trump is someone that does this regularly. He's been doing it with his businesses, and he does it also with his government practice. So other governments find it an issue basically to kick a hornet's nest or a bee's nest.
Yeah.
But I also believe if you're a government or if you're a representative of a government or a minister of a government,
yeah,
you must be empowered to an extent constitutionally and even through your executive participation to intervene when necessary. You and your office, not you going and saying, mm-hmm, yeah, I feel like kicking you out today, like Itamar Ben-Gavir of Israel.
Bro is going for viral.
he just did the worst thing.
The worst, Ben-Gavir, that's not the worst he has done.
That is the worst thing.
PR-wise, because I knew it was bad, but I didn't know how bad it was until I read Prime Minister Netanyahu's response to that. I was like, oh boy, this is bad.
Yeah.
This is bad. Yeah. Because you know it's bad when the Prime Minister is responding.
When the guy who you have a coalition government with says, ah, brah, not to that level.
Look, everyone that has been following global politics knows that Netanyahu is just working with Ben-Gavir because he's running a coalition government. If it wasn't for a coalition, he wouldn't be working with it, because before he basically formed that coalition, he didn't want to even be in the same place with Ben-Gavir, because the man was, at some point, Ben-Gavir was, is someone who was not considered for the country's mandatory military service of the country because of how just far right the man is in his head.
His ideas.
So, and the dumbest thing is, now, that's the man in charge of national security, by the way. Now you know why the country's finance, the country has a budget for,
the finance minister is just another whack.
Smoltrich, are you kidding me? Smoltrich is just Ben-Gavir 2.0.
If you guys ask us how we know this guy, sorry.
Step one, don't have a life outside your house. You do just fine.
You'll find interesting subjects to read about and to watch movies about and videos about and documentaries about.
Yeah, the good thing is there are no cameras here because the glasses are not helping.
What, Helmut?
If there were cameras here,
we shall not ask questions.
Yeah, it would be worse.
Do not ask.
Yeah, the whole thing went viral, and that's not very good for any country's public relations.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, the whole Tanzania, Zambia, Zimbabwe land, the thing is, this is going to create a lot of issues with international investors, because I think a lot of people, I can be in office right now and make a lot of not well thought out through policies. Policies, and then just keep signing documents in Washington, in Moscow, in Beijing without reading them through, because I know that 5 years down the line, I'm out of office, and then you come in that office, and then you end up with a fire situation. Where you have, investors or financial institutions that were dealing with your predecessor, they reached a bunch of agreements. Your predecessor literally lied. So they can have access to money. Now you have to clean house.
Yeah.
And I'm out there just chilling because I'm not in the office anymore. And even if you wanted to hold me accountable, there is, I don't even know whose dumb idea was that. You have all these laws that provide me with all kinds of immunity. So I'm just chilling at this point. You are the president. Now you have to answer all the questions to the IMF, World Bank, Credit Suisse, and all other kinds of financial institutions, foreign investors.
Yeah.
While the person that created the problem is not in office anymore, therefore they are not responsible for it anymore.
Like, and still drinking pina coladas next to the beach.
Yeah, they're in Bahamas.
Where in Bahamas? The person is probably there in Tel Aviv enjoying the view. That's just it.
So, quick money, that's the issue.
But quick money for who?
Most of these things are just self-enrichment.
True.
Yeah, Mobutu Seseko basically built a palace in the middle of the DRC forest, which is now being reclaimed by Mother Nature. It was all the Martians are now just, the trees are taking over. Bro just decided to take the most extravagant monument to self-indulgence. Just set that thing in the middle of DRC and was just walking within that, leopard skin or whatever, head that his head was made out of.
Mm.
Yeah. Representing Africa. Through himself. But still nothing beats John Bethel Bukasa.
Look, leave Bukasa humble. Bukasa is Bukasaing, or he Bukasa'd at the time.
Yeah.
Of being the Bukasa that he is.
You know my favorite part about Bukasa?
What?
He converted and found the Lord after he was kicked out of office.
Well, at least we have Africans who were not on the level of Pol Pot, who, and this is the thing that scares me about education.
What's that?
That this is about true education, true education. So Pol Pot goes to Paris, goes to France, sees France. He's literally like Peter the Great.
Mm-hmm.
Peter the Great goes to Paris as a young man, as a young Russian prince, sees Western Europe. He then gets impressed with, now why are the Western Europeans like this? And then comes back to, Imperial Russia, to his parents, the court at Moscow. And then he sees, as what he, in his own words, termed the barbarity of his fellow people. That's not Dwight's words. It's the words that Peter the Great
used. Just savage.
The barbarity of his people.
Yeah.
So he then went, when he became Tsar of Russia, he then decided to bring in Western European teachers, lecturers, academics, commercial experts to try and even, what's that thing that they, that at one stage our parents had, the etiquette trainers, people that train you on like everyday etiquette and
Social interactions.
And social interacting skills and stuff like that. It worked on the nobility in Russia. It did not work on the common man and woman in Russia. I'll say it again. It worked on the nobility of Russia.
Yeah.
It didn't work on the common man and woman of Russia. He went and built St. Petersburg, which technically looks like a copy and paste, cut and paste situation of Paris and a few other cities across Europe in terms of its layout and its facade.
And architecture.
And architecture, which is the facade. The architecture is the facade. And people still ask the question, what was Peter the Great trying to achieve? Now, Peter the Great had this idea. He saw Paris. He saw Western Europe. He wanted that here close to him. He could not. He could not, unfortunately, get his own people to try and be what he saw back then. That's where I also realized, since I've also traveled Southern Africa throughout, Namibia will never be South Africa. South Africa, the moment you cross over the Orange River, Helmut, or you fly into Joburg or wherever, whatever you do, where you move from one side of the border to the other side of the border, you will immediately experience a feeling that only you as a person will experience when you go into another country. It literally feels I'm in a different zone.
Yep.
I'm in a different place. And immediately, the first thing you see is different language, different expressions, different way of interacting, the societal structures, the way the town is laid out. Even if you just go here to Livingston on the Zambezi, on Victoria Falls.
All I did was cross the river, the Zambezi River. And it was late. The buses had left, so I had to book a guest house. The moment you open your mouth, they know you are not from there.
I have to now ask, was that the opposite gender or everybody in the community?
I went through that at the reception. I was booking guest house. Now the reception, at the reception, there was a leader. There was a lady.
A leader?
Yeah, I know, right? Even the exchange guys, I ran through the exact same thing. But those guys, it wasn't, I don't think it's something that's new to them because they interact with people that are crossing all the time.
Yeah.
Now, when I reached Monse, I ran through the exact same thing with my taxi driver.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Well, so I hop in a cab. I stop a cab and just give him my destination exactly as my uncle gave it to me because I have no clue where I am. Mm. So, and he's like, oh, you're not from here. I'm like, yep, I'm not.
Mm.
So the moment you start talking, the accent is way off.
Mm. Yeah. Their accent.
It's widely different. So that's a very easy way to pinpoint.
Plus the Iwe.
Yeah.
Everything is Iwe. Iwe.
Hey, they are not all like
Iwe. Iwe. I'm sorry, Zambians, but yeah, that's all we know about you guys. Iwe.
Yeah. Look, but I didn't. But the guys that I met at the border, I had the best experience though. I met in some, I ran into some, just some of the nicest people I'll ever meet.
I was told not to go to a nightclub. I just might be kidnapped by other women, and I decided no.
Well, lucky me, clubbing is not my thing.
Yeah. No, I didn't even want to go to the club.
I was just
pointed. The lady, the receptionist, told me, "If you go to the club right now, you will not come home." I was like, "That's not nice to hear as a tourist."
Is that threatening me with a good time, or just don't go out there, or your life could be in danger?
No, she did, but she was very aggressive in that statement.
You'll get.
She was very aggressive.
You'd have given it a shot. You know what? Let me find out. Out of curiosity.
No, let me go home. Let me just go sleep in my room. So yeah. So that was the situation. Yeah. So.
Their dedication to to locally served food though. Oof.
Yeah, oh no, the Zambians are cool. If only they were allowed also to
We have to send those guys an invoice.
True.
Yeah.
That is true. But on that note, David is about to make his entrance, which he is currently making an entrance.
And we had Vision 2025, which ended silencing of the guns 2021. So we got this, guys. We got this.
At least we are still within the decade of water with the UN. African, eh? Us Africans, ne? We love themes. We really love themes. But we don't even stick to the theme. That's the worst part. We don't even stick to
the theme. Look, man, each and every single one of us is making promises in their political parties, in their countries, they know they won't keep. What makes us think that collectively, at the African Union, we will all of a sudden start keeping the promises.
Just imagine Mnangagwa and Ramaphosa standing at the buffet together there in Addis Ababa going like, you know what? I how do you like this year's theme? And then the other one just goes like, you know what? I don't even know if there's a theme. We still have to vote on the theme.
My favorite part of the Fisher Road documentary is when one of the guys was found giving, you know, after giving his speech on transparency. Yeah. And he was like, you're here talking about transparency and your name is... Okay, we don't have a lawyer.
On that note, guys, let's see each other over the weekend. Obviously, as Helmut and I respectively also have Sunday shows.
Yeah.
But alternatively, there is always Monday. Stay tuned for David, who's here saluting at us for some reason to depart.
I will be here giving taxi drivers the perfect mathematics formula that I worked out. For taxi drivers. I worked out a mathematics formula for taxi drivers.
That thing doesn't make sense, Helmut. You're worse than Trump.
It does. It's block equals unblock.
You are worse than Trump. There's a lot of multiplication there. I was looking for the actual answers, but anyway, that's you and the taxi drivers.
Yeah.